Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Independence Film and TV Podcast Kernels. I'm your host, Christopher Hooton. Our guest on the podcast this week is Jesse Armstrong, a man a lot of you probably know from British shows like Peep Show, Fresh Meat, or for writing the film scripts for Four Lions and In the Loop. But the reason I wanted to talk to him this week was about his new HBO show, Succession, which has just finished on HBO in the US and is kind of midway through airing on Sky Atlantic in the UK, so you should be able to track it down if you're yet to watch. On paper, when I first heard about the show, it didn't seem that exciting. A kind of Murdoch-style family who own most of the US media. It was kind of some interest to me because I work in that general realm, but didn't jump out at me when I read about it in Deadline or wherever. But then I saw who was involved with it and the fact that the first few episodes are going to be directed by Adam McKay, who you may remember as the director of 2015's The Big Short, which is just such an immensely impressive film to me. Like, it should have been a film about the subprime mortgage crisis. Shouldn't have been entertaining and funny, but it was. Didn't take itself too seriously, and it acknowledged that its subject matter was boring and played off that, and it was just a really clever little piece of cinema. So knowing that Adam was going to be on board made me think, okay, I reckon he can probably bring this to life. And then to compound that, Jesse was writing the script for it and showrunning it, which was an intriguing and kind of unusual fit, because it's a man who's kind of made his name writing about the sort of idiosyncratic nature of Britain, really, and growing up in urban environments in Britain. So for him to suddenly be writing about the New York elite, the 1%, was an interesting prospect. And the collaboration between the two of them definitely worked. Succession's, you know, been one of my favourite new shows this year and immediately grabbed me from the pilot. And it's just really very funny and kind of looks at conglomerates and elites from a different sort of perspective. You know, often these kinds of characters are portrayed as being bumbling idiots, you know, who've been found themselves in high positions because of nepotism or whatever, but have no idea what they're doing and really are only fit to be like sweeping the floors. But that's not the case with these characters. They're all definitely smart, the Roys, this family at the head of this media empire, but they just choose to be neglectful of their businesses or evil with them. And that makes for an interesting dynamic, and all the characters are very strong. So I wanted to talk to Jesse and find out, you know, what it's like to suddenly be working on a big HBO show like that and what the kind of the role of a showrunner is when you've also got a director there handling the nuts and bolts on set. So I think we should just get straight down to it. Hopefully the videos of you who haven't seen any of Succession yet, this will encourage you to pick it up. And for those of you that have, hopefully you'll learn a little bit more about how it was put together. The only other things to mention, I think, we very briefly at the end discuss the entire history of You, which was an episode of Black Mirror back in season one that Jesse wrote and which Robert Downey Jr. subsequently bought the movie rights to quite a few years ago now, but nothing seemed to come of it. So we kind of had a little update on that. And the other thing to mention is the fucking background hum on this recording. There was some gnarly hum in the room where we were sat. So we've done what we can to eliminate that and or just kind of reduce it, but that has had the unfortunate byproduct of making the recording sound very dry, as if we're like conducting the interview from the ends of the earth after an apocalypse. But hopefully it's clear enough that you can make everything out and you still manage to get something from the chat. So without further ado, here's me and Jesse Armstrong.
How you doing? All right?
Not too bad. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, so, congrats on getting the show.
Thank you very much.
Usually with these things, they send me about six or seven episodes, and sometimes, you know, you just watch one or two to get a flavour for it.
Yeah.
Ended up watching all of them in, like, 2 days,
so
obviously you must be doing something
terrific,
something right.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I was thinking watching the show that, like, I'm impressed with the fact that, you know, you're someone who wrote Peep Show for so many years, writing jokes about Harpenden and Mugs and Miller Corners. And now you can write about Americans in upscale New York convincingly. Is it hard to jump into a completely different vernacular? Or?
No. Well, I mean, the honest answer is not that part of it. I don't find tough. You know, I guess coming up with constructing the world where that coming up with the show feels that's a tough part of it.
The world building.
Exactly. And what's this show going to be about? Why might people watch it? What do we want to talk about? And how can you do a show that can fit that into? But the actual writing that stuff, you know, I guess people, I've written those very domestic-y kind of situations. But A, they're still quite, I think, part of the pleasure of this show is that it's quite as they say, granular, detailed portrayal of that world. So it's not exactly Muller Fruit Corners, but you know, these super rich people have helicopter pilots who they favour and ones they don't like, and they have meals that don't go as planned, and they, you know, I like the textured detail of their lives. And also, yeah, I've written a little bit about politics and power and stuff as well, so it's not a total going from total domestic into another sphere. But yeah.
What was the genesis of it? How did it come about? I read that you had a screenplay for a Murdoch thing knocking around. Did it sort of, was it born out of that? Or?
It was not. I mean, I wrote that about the actual real Rupert Murdoch. It's quite a weird sort of screenplay about the real family with them all named, and they appeared in it. And it was, I wrote that quite a long time ago now. So I guess I knew about that family and that particular dynamic from a long time ago. But this show was, I read some of the Redstone's biography, who owns Paramount and Viacom and CBS TV network, and then I read Disney. A bit of a binge of stories about these families, and especially in the UK with the press barons like Murdoch and Maxwell from another era, and we're familiar with these media families, but in America, I mean, the American TV networks. ABC is owned by Disney, which was a family firm, so now it's a public company, but the family is still influential. CBS is Viacom and Sumner Redstone. NBC is the Robertses, who own Comcast. That's the big networks. And then you've got Fox owned by Murdoch. Then you have almost all of local TV is owned by a big right-wing family, the Sinclairs, and they're buying more of it. You have like the Mercers, who own Breitbart and were influential.
Big financiers,
Analytica.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the American media landscape is dominated by multi-generational, powerful media families at the moment, but they're under massive pressure from Facebook, Google, and Netflix. But it started to feel like, you know what, there's a show here, especially if you're interested in how the hell Anglo-American politics have ended up in the shape they have.
Yeah, it seems like there's like two sort of aspects to show. One is that dynamic of a family being in charge of something, and the fact that's inherently comedic because it's in no way meritocratic, and you've got these people who have zero qualifications sometimes in these big positions.
Yeah.
And then the other one that maybe is sort of the show's hinted at in what I've seen so far, but not as far as is within the news industry itself.
Sure.
Which I think, obviously, because I work in it, I wouldn't do, but I think it's fascinating because it's in such a bizarre period where it has like real kind of crisis of identity.
Yes.
It's like, are we there to entertain? Are we there to inform?
Yes.
How much opinion should we have? Like,
yes.
Are we cool and
and
little, or are we big, old fashioned prestige brand?
Yeah.
These kind of things.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's changing at such a rapid rate is like an interesting thing to explore, I guess.
Absolutely. Without wanting to unpick my own show too much, there's a succession going on about who's going to take over, and there's also a succession, you see in the first episode they're trying to buy a sort of vicey, BuzzFeedy, gawkery kind of, see exactly what it is, but that's the world that they're trying to get into, and those big media brands, they don't know what to do really in the face of the disruptive.
I love there's a line, I think references where he's like, go back to making Uber for news or whatever it is.
Yeah, you hear, there's a lot, I'm sure you hear a lot of nonsense talked.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like, you know, a lot of shows and House of Cards have done it as well. I've obviously sort of referenced the BuzzFeeds of this world and stuff, but I feel like we're almost entering a new period now where the whole kind of like quick viral hit stuff of that was, you know, everyone was chasing a couple of years ago is now starting to die out, and now everyone's, yeah, all of those same companies that came up on cat videos are now being, yeah, like, now we need to, yeah, start writing 5,000 word pieces and doing investigations again and being ourselves serious. It's, yeah, it's fascinating how it changes.
Yeah, yeah, and it feels a bit like that in terms of podcasts. Maybe it's just the world that people are like, things are pretty fucking serious, I think I better, yeah, get clued up.
Yeah, yeah. And how did you come to work with Adam McKay?
I wrote a script for him about American savage Republican media. Political strategist from the 80s called Lee Atwater, and that never went anywhere, like a lot of things. But I stayed in contact with them, and then when this show looked like it was gonna happen, checked out if he was interested, and
it's such a perfect fit for it. Yeah,
right. It feels great to have him involved, and yeah, he brought, you know, I think it has quite a loose feel, and he definitely encouraged improvisation and loose takes, and something I knew a bit from working with Armando, and so it was a really happy fit, I think.
Who came up with the deciding to use the zooms? That's the one sort of characteristic of the show that I think is different, those kind of documentary styles.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. I mean, the visual style is Adam's. So yeah,
yeah.
Him and his DOP. We watched a lot of documentaries and movies to refine the style.
Yeah, and you're showrunner on it, right?
Yeah.
What does your job entail as showrunner? Like,
what is it? I guess it's like. I wrote the pilot in the last couple of episodes. I'm in charge of running the writing room, and then you have overall responsibility for the show, really. Yeah.
Are you there on set?
Yeah.
A lot of directors don't like writers on set, do they?
Yeah, well, I think that's maybe. I don't know. I think that's probably an older era. Nowadays in TV, I think often the writers around, even in the UK. But yeah, a showrunner is always would always be there.
Do you get precious about it? Because it's, you know,
about the words,
or just, you know, the fact that it's your script and you've obviously already got an idea in your head. Is it difficult? You know,
well, you precious might be a pejorative way. I'm like, yeah, really. I hope not precious, but certainly like very very interested in, yeah, how we're doing, yeah, everything. But I think
no backseat directing though.
No backseat directing. No. We had brilliant directors, and yeah, it's without wanting to like sell you a line, it really is collaborative. I mean, I guess it can go wrong. Didn't go wrong for us, but it's a highly collaborative situation because I'm the one who has an eye on the whole arc of the whole season, and I know stuff that the director who's coming in for an episode might not know. I don't have time to fully tell them. So it's highly collaborative.
Yeah, and a lot of the shows,
but not precious about the words. Like, we change the words a lot, and it's improvised.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
If there's a new way of doing the scene, I'm always like, this is what we thought would work. Let's do it. And now, if there's a problem, let's address it.
Yeah, and obviously, I guess there's some shows you've worked on where you've more, whether it's with Sam Bain or whoever, you guys have written the episode. Now you're working with a writing team. Is that fairly new for you, or have you done that a few times before?
We did it on, we had a small team on Fresh Meat, and other writers on Peep Show, but not a room.
I'm kind of fascinated by that. I think most people don't really know how that works, and how,
sure,
you know, a certain person ends up with the credit, and,
sure,
and how the work is dished out. And
sure,
can you explain a little bit of that?
So they're all different, that's,
yeah,
one thing. So there's never, you know, everyone runs it and does a room slightly differently. But ours, we, you know, there's the pilot written by somebody, usually the showrunner, and that's true in this case. So I write the pilot, so I know a bunch of stuff, and then we get together, you know, between 6 and 10 writers, and talk a lot. Talk about, you know, I'll probably have a pitch for how I think the season and the show goes, but then we discover a lot of stuff and talk it all out, plot lines, character stuff, a lot of you end up talking quite personally about stuff about family and stories, stupid things, funny things. Sometimes funny things turn into serious, good storylines. Anyway, so you get a load of stuff about the shape of the season, which you all do together in the room, typically. Then you, as you say, we say, break the episodes one by one, and then somebody goes off and writes each episode, but then the room and myself come back into operation as we sort of polish and refine those scripts.
Do certain writers sort of say, I feel like this is the episode like I should take charge of, or...?
Maybe it's a bit more... It's a bit organic, yeah. I guess maybe you sometimes get a feel for, like, how that would fit that person. Yeah, a bit of that.
And then I know you obviously you talked about having, like, read a lot of books about, like, families that are in charge of these big organisations and stuff. Did you also have to do, like, a lot of research into, like, kind of all, like, business and stocks and marketing and stuff, because it requires such a knowledge of that? It must be a bit of, like, a difficult to get your head around sometimes.
Yeah, some of it is. We had a great team of researchers and great team of advisors. And usually that stuff, it sounds complicated, but one company acquiring another, the details of the varieties of stock and the variety, you know, the kind of all stock or all cash offer that people are making. Anyway, the details can be interesting, and I hope we don't shy away from them. But
it's not as granular as The Big Short or something, is it? It doesn't go right deep down into...
No, I mean, in terms of the media ownership stuff and some of the later episodes when it gets into... There is a level of detail. I think it's all right. You don't need to worry about it too much in the writer's room, as long as the big picture is right. This is what's happening. These people are getting, old media content brands are getting, destroyed by those hegemonic, monopolistic new players, and there's going to be a lot of consolidation in the market, right? That's not that you don't need to be working at the Wall Street Journal to figure that out, and then. But it's useful to know the details of how these things happen, but it shouldn't intimidate a novice writer who comes in and wants to do an episode but feels like they don't know the whole media climate, because we can always fix that with the research team available.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you sit down to write a script, do you sort of want to try and push through to the end and then go back? Or do you take it more in stages?
On an individual script?
Yeah.
Do I do what they call a toilet paper draft, where I just type it out like Kerouac on a big roll of wallpaper?
Maybe too pejorative, but like somewhere between the two.
It's actually useful, I think, as a writer to call it the toilet paper draft, because you've got these two pressures. One is like that it has to be perfect, and the other is that you need to get it done, and you have to find a happy... And sometimes it's useful to think this draft doesn't matter. Actually, when I write, I tend to take quite a lot of care on my first draft. I mean, so it's not unusual for bits to remain in the final piece that I wrote in the first draft.
Yeah. I was thinking about kind of the moments that feel a bit sort of like kind of randomly injected, whether it's like a The scene, I like it, the scene where Roman's like, let's take our shirts off. It's just,
okay.
Happens. Or with a bit, as a scene where Greg comes into work with his lunch in a dog poop bag and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Do those kind of things, I always imagine that they're more likely to things that are going to come into your head in the real world as you wander around.
Sure.
And then you kind of put them in a pocket and are like, right, I'll use that rather than, you know, when you're sitting there writing through, there's something bizarre like that comes to you. Is that how it works for you?
Yeah, sure. You do, if you keep a notebook or even a mental notebook, I think those are two good examples. I think the shirts off was something that came out either of rehearsal or in the room. And the dog poop bag, I think, was something which I thought, oh, that would be weird if you ended up taking food home. It's something disgusting about dog poop bags
before
they've got dog shit in them, isn't there? So that's something I wanted to go in.
It's cool that it could come up in rehearsals at that late stage. Someone might just think about.
Yeah.
With the Roy family, I really like all the characters. I feel like I'm warm to them. Not warm to them, they're not particularly warm people.
Sure.
But like, I engage with them quite quickly, and I really like, I think Tom's a really great character in the way he's got, he's so downtrodden that the only person he can shit on is Greg, so he does.
Yeah.
But I was kind of thinking that in the same way that a certain president right now I don't think actually really has any political beliefs and just wants to win and be popular. And if he had to run as a Democrat, he probably would. Similarly with them, I get the sense that they're sort of quite apolitical. Obviously it would serve their interest to be Republican, but actually they just want to be in control and win, and they're not actually particularly bothered about pushing, maybe Logan more so, but not actually bothered about pushing a political agenda. They just want to do whatever's going to make the most success.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And of those big media families I mentioned before, some are nominally Republican, some are nominally Democrat. I guess I'd have two views on that. One is that's, I think you're right to some degree in the analysis. On the other, from a sort of a left perspective, that's part of the, you would say that's part of the problem, right? Because they've got a deeply ingrained pro-business, free enterprise view of the world, which is going to lead to a very unequal society, and that's just what they take as red. And they, you're right that they could stick a different political label on that, but they do have some strongly held principles about how an economy should work. So I wouldn't say that they are apolitical. It's just that there is a form of politics which is amenable to their view of society, which you could stick either label on.
Yeah, and also like having no regard for ethics or stance and those kind of things is in and of itself kind of right wing, isn't it? Like,
well, I don't know. It's certainly that's a form of macho business kind of culture, I would say, isn't it? The kind of big dick competition, you've got to fuck over your opponent kind of thing. I don't know whether I'm from the left, but that's not necessarily inherent within conservatism. I don't think it'd be impossible to be an ethical right wing person.
It's a difficult time to be a leftist at the moment, isn't it? Like, I am myself, but it just feels like it's such a, in America particularly, you know, it feels like there's no coherent message. It's a very strange time. The right is dominant, and it feels like the left doesn't really know how to combat it.
Yeah, I guess that there's the cultural generalized small p political response, which feels quite clear in its response, but in terms of organized, the Democratic Party doesn't seem to be in a position where it's able to articulate a clear alternative. I guess that's true.
I fear that it's gonna run so anti-Trump and so far in the other direction, it's gonna push people more towards him, but we shall see. A question I'm going to start like over the next year, I'm trying to ask every sort of screenwriter I talk to is just, where do you write? And then I want to kind of collect them all in little.
Sure.
So presuming you're not in a writer's room, you're just maybe you're at home or wherever you're comfortable. Where do you write? What does your workstation look like? Do you have like a cup of tea? Is there like a view? What's the deal?
I write. So I always write on my own. You know, the writer's room is really useful, but that's for generating ideas. Yeah. And never try and write a piece of dialogue or a scene in the writer's room. And I have an office in Brixton, and it's quite empty of entertainment. Doesn't have Wi-Fi. I think that's important for me. And it has a coffee machine, and it's quite nice and light, and it does have a little window.
Plants?
No plants. Oh, no responsibilities. Yeah. Don't want any responsibilities in there.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, plants are weirdly stress-inducing.
Exactly.
Those things are And just finally, the entire history of you, which you wrote, I like, you know, Black Mirror's gone on to such amazing things and, you know, got these huge Netflix budgets now, but I think it's still probably my favourite episode and certainly favourite script.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you were involved in its sale in any way, the film rights-wise, and if you know what's happening with it, because it was obviously, like, quite a cool story, but it's been a few years now.
Yeah, so I was involved with that. I think I had the idea for it, and Charlie and Annabelle were kind enough to give me the rights, so I was, like, was able to do what I wanted with it, and we sold it, but nothing happened. I developed it for a while, and it was a sort of Hollywood, you know, drawn out development process that went nowhere. So it's in what you want, whatever you want to say, development hell, or just not happening.
It's strange because there's been quite a few films lately that have been in that wheelhouse as well.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think when I tried to do it, to try and change the scale of it, I think something would have got lost. You know, it's quite a domestic.
Yeah, very much so.
Small scale story. You could, as soon as you started trying to make something quote bigger out of it, it kind of it felt like it might fall apart in your hands. What the actual thing was. So in a way, I feel like you, I like the TV version. So I'm quite.
Yeah.
Doesn't eat me up that it hasn't got made into a movie, because I'm not sure it would be
The technology in the film, the chip just serves to kind of boost the domesticity, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Play out more arguments. Going into the backstory of the microchip and the company wouldn't really make sense.
You could imagine doing that story, and I have imagined it at length. It'd be possible, but I think you would lose a certain something.
Cool. Alright, well, thanks for your time today.
Not at all, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, I hope you go on to more seasons, because it's
been
so fun.
Good. Yeah, well, they've said we're going to do another season, so that's going to happen.
Great. Alright,
it's really nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for good questions.
Thank you.
Thanks for good answers.
Alright, that was Kernels this week. Thanks a bunch for listening, and we'll see you in another week or two. In the meantime, do please get in touch. You know, if you want to tweet us or Instagram us or tweet me, you know, we'd love to hear from you guys, and it's not going to be howling into the beyond or howling into the void. You know, we'll get back to you, and it'll be good to hear your thoughts on the podcast and any suggestions you might have for future episodes and future guests. All right, catch you soon. Thanks.